And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this is a week of anniversaries. Sunday, I think, anyway, this weekend, is Ben Franklin's, the anniversary of his birth, 322 years ago. And what, Tuesday, I guess, is the one-year anniversary of Trump's coming to power again for the second time.
Yeah.
I'm sure if we look, we'll find other serendipitous anniversaries falling into place. But that's a good bookend, Ben Franklin.
MLK.
Oh, Martin Luther King Day, right, on the 19th. So this is an anniversary celebration, so to speak. So what is your, forget Ben Franklin for the moment, what's your outlook? How do you judge Trump's first year? Successful, unsuccessful, and in whose terms?
Well, let me back up. It's hard for me to forget Ben Franklin. When I was in eighth grade, I was in a contest. I had to write an essay on Ben Franklin, the foremost man of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the university that he founded.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of, you know, in my blood. Had he been younger, he would have made, I think, a great president of the United States. I view Ben Franklin as the quintessential American.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it, born into poverty, moves from Boston to Philadelphia,
mm-hmm,
to seek his fortune,
mm-hmm,
creates his own persona,
mm-hmm,
essentially, with Poor Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And then he rises up to the top of governance. A scientist,
mm-hmm,
a diplomat,
mm-hmm,
the things that I'm still wearing bifocals.
Mm-hmm.
He created those.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the greatest American that never was president, because he was,
mm-hmm,
just too old
mm-hmm,
at the time of the when the Constitution was done. But he helped, as a political theorist, he,
mm-hmm,
helped write the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Well, he said, "I've given you a republic if you can keep it. Can we keep
that's
it?"
That's correct. Yeah, and there have been several attempts not to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Civil War. Lincoln was able to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in an era where autocracy,
mm-hmm,
rather than democracy, seems to be transcendent.
Mm-hmm.
What we found out this first year, and the polling is that they don't view Trump's year as a success. I think but posing that question in black or white terms, I think misses certain things. There are a lot of people who say, we like his policy, or we'll accept his policies, but they don't like how the policies are being carried out. They don't like the thuggery that they see coming from ICE. They know that there's something inherently wrong when people are asked to show their papers, walking down the street or in their cars. They know that the folks that are, having masked armed patrols in their cities smacks of something that's repugnant. So it's a mixed bag in terms of Trump's term, but in many ways, for him, not necessarily the people, but or the country, but for him, he's been more successful than people predicted, in good part to the fact that they were prepared. The Heritage Foundation, with its Project 2025, came in. They knew the people that they were going to place in government. It was putting the foxes in charge of the hen house. And they did a lot of that. And they they really were and still are full speed ahead. They are undeterred. They don't care if their popularity, Trump is way underwater in approval, disapproval personally, but they don't care if it goes down to 30% or 20% or 10%. Their aim is to fundamentally change America in their image. And the Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon type of image, as racist as it is, and as self-defeating as it is, but they don't care. When they leave office, they're going to look back and say, you can't undo this. And I'm afraid in some ways, they or in some instances, they're going to be right. It's going to be very difficult to undo. So that's where I'm at this
Well, point. When you say it's going to be difficult to undo, do you mean particular policies, or do you mean by the structure of government itself, the form of government itself?
More on the policies, but you know, they ignored the structure of government. They cut through all of that. They say we don't have to go through these administrative steps, or we don't have to go through the agencies. We're just going to do it. And that was part of the consolidation of power in the president, this unitary theory of the presidency, which has received the blessing of the Supreme Court. Remembering, of course, the Supreme Court, those members have been nurtured and trained by the in some ways heritage, but in other ways, the Federalist Society, which is just another offshoot of what occurred beginning in the 1970s and 80s to point to this moment. I mean, this has been worked on for the last 50 years, and it's finally, Falk's rule of politics, number one, is think long term. And that this is a long-term strategy that's we're now seeing bear its fruits, so to speak.
So what happens in the midterms, and does it matter?
Well, Trump's talking about not having midterms. Quite frankly, I don't see why he's quite as deathly afraid of the midterms as he's projecting, except for one thing. He comes out and he says, they're going to impeach me again. And he knows that that is a black mark on him personally. He's stinging from the fact that he was impeached twice. But the political fact is, and I think the Democrats should stay away from this, is why impeach him again? Because you can't convict him unless you get a major change of heart of the Republicans in the Senate. You need 2/3 of the Senate, and you ain't going to get that at this stage. So why get diverted? Start doing other things that you can accomplish.
What could they do?
Well, they could work on getting the Epstein files, getting them out, leaking them, having start passing laws that that show that are really pro people laws, and have the Republicans try to stop that. That'll only start consolidating your it's more of a long term. So if a senator is up for election in 2 years and starts voting against things that are pro people, then might be able to get rid of them and gain more control of the government.
So what you're saying is if the Democrats manage to get control of the House, they should concentrate and use that control of the House to pass maybe a small number, but a very loudly and demonstratively propagandized number of populist bills.
Yeah.
So that it ties up the Republicans in preventing them from
who they are.
It exposes them for who they are, and it prevents them from introducing and popularizing their own crackpot lying bills about on the same issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without the hope that these will get passed.
I mean, it's taking a stand.
Fine. That's okay. That's all right. That's fine. You know, you got to make propaganda. But in this case, the propaganda also stymies the Republicans from legislatively doing horrible things. On the other hand, the Republicans aren't using the legislature to do horrible things. They're using the executive action to do horrible things.
Yeah, and the Democrats may not, in the House, may not be able to stop that, but at least they have some sort of a counterweight. Remember,
maybe impeachment, if not of everybody, of Trump, of Noam, of Hegseth, of whoever, maybe that's part of the same approach.
Well, and possibly to impeach at the lower level rather than go after the top level.
They won't succeed there either, right? The Republicans aren't going to get rid of it.
No, but you might see some people resign rather than get impeached, and then that ends up. But, when I talk about their enacting an agenda, Falk rule number two is that ideas matter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And legislation is the exposition of an idea.
Right.
Of how you're doing things.
Right.
So, now you're thinking long term. Now your ideas matter, and it gives you a little better part of rule number three, which is to control the communications. If you're proposing legislation, you've got to learn how to promote it and show people how it will be a positive effect on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. When there's a Fox News out there, but at least it'll give you the opportunity to do something. And then my rule number four is, attack, 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 always play offense. And that's an offensive play. We keep having these polls that show that the Republicans are not very popular and their ideas are not popular in many ways. But what we see is, and people are leaving to some extent the Republican Party, but they're not joining the Democrats. Mm-hmm. They're going independent.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that the Democrats have not succeeded in any way of showing people any reason to become a Democrat. You've got to do that. And then you run into the problem when there's an election, which is a binary election. It's always Republican versus Democrat. That's rarely do you have an independent of any means in there. You remember, even Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, ran as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't run as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
That you've got to get people to vote for the Democrat if in the election if they're worthy of the vote. This week we had a statement came out up in the state of Montana where the Senate race, there's going to be a Senate race in 2026. And apparently behind the scenes, John Tester, the former senator there, who was defeated last time, was able to recruit the president of the University of Montana to run, but not as a Democrat, as an independent. And Tester came out and infuriated a lot of people by saying, people won't vote for Democrats. The name bullied so badly that they'll either vote Republican or they'll stay home. And so if we need to have an independent rather than a Democrat. Didn't that happen in Nebraska? For the there was a race last time, and the Democrats didn't endorse anybody. It was Kansas that they ran the guy ran as an independent, against the sitting Republican and almost won.
He almost won. Yes, that's right. That's right.
So,
but that's happened many times in American history. That's the that's the origin of the Farmer Labor Party in the Midwest, right? Wisconsin. Yeah. In New York State, you had the American Labor Party in the 1930s, where people would not vote Democratic because the Democratic Party was in alliance with the Dixiecrats. And progressive New Yorkers did not wish to vote for a Dixiecrat-dominated party. So they set up the American Labor Party and voted for Roosevelt on that line. So
You have a mayor who he won the Democratic primary, but he didn't run as a pure Democrat. He ran as Democratic Socialist.
And it's normal that that the line should be used, because in many ways the line is just a franchise, because the party itself stands for nothing. It's just the candidate who determines what the policy of the party at any given time is. So Pester's statement may annoy people, but it's completely in line with the practice and the law of elections in America.
And it's pragmatic.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's pragmatic. We'll see. Democrats can get elected, but it is harder. Ohio's going to test that. Sherrod Brown, who is a really great senator and really pro-populist, lost his last election primarily because it was an anti-democratic wave that was there. He's running again. We'll see what he does.
Well, so let me ask you this. So the Democrats in the Congress are going to be some people who are Democrats, some people who are people who ran as Democrats, like, the kind of independent who couldn't get on the line or figured that's the way to get elected, even though he didn't come from the, dominant wing of the Democratic Party. Is the Democratic Party, are the representatives who call themselves Democrats united enough to do the kind of thing you're talking about if they win the House, not the Senate? Because you have at least four factions that are organized.
Yeah.
And one of them doesn't agree with what you said. One of them thinks you can cross the aisle, and that's what we should be doing.
Yeah.
God knows what that means.
Well, what we're going to see, I mean, if the Democrats have a wave and have a sweep, we're going to see if any of the Republicans cross the aisle to work with Democrats.
Now you get to Bresnahan. He does that, right?
Well, he's trying to do that.
Right.
What he's trying to do is to undo the things that he's already put in place. He said, look at me. I'm part of the solution of a problem that I created.
And correct.
I don't think it's sticking very well. He hasn't had enough time to really build up a strong base of support. But it's a difficult district, and we'll have to see. Before we go back to Bresnahan, I did want to mention something else. The other thing the Democrats have to do is to exhibit something called strength. That's one thing that we see that the Republicans dwell on over and over again, and Trump succeeded. I'm strong. Democrats are weak and wobbly, and we're starting to see a couple of examples in both ways on this. Mark Kelly, who's been threatened with prosecution by the politicized Department of Justice, isn't backing down. He's standing up and daring them, or daring the Department of Defense to take away his pension or to lower his pension. On the other hand, we're seeing the governor of Colorado, Gerald Polis, who's all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, turned wobbly and is talking about commuting the sentence of that woman that we talk about, who was convicted of voter tampering or voter related issues.
Kim Davis.
Kim Davis. Yeah. And who the judge just totally excoriated as her actions being un-American, unrepentant, and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump came out and said, I'm going to pardon her. I did issue a pardon, but it has no effect because she's convicted on state charges. Why Polis would do this is, you know, beyond me. But that's the wobbly type of Democrat that isn't going to, you know, garner a shift in public opinion. You have to be strong, and we're going to see what Governor Waltz and Mayor Fry do when they've been attacked. We know that there are other Democrats who have been attacked or threatened with lawfare. Lisa Slotkin isn't backing down. Houlihan from Pennsylvania, the congresswoman, isn't backing down. That's what you have to do. I think it's Timothy Snyder says the first rule to fight autocracy is not to surrender in advance. You've got to fight it. You've got to fight it. And that's where the Democrats have to show more strength. A lot of people don't feel Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries shows, you know, a lot of strength. What you see from the Trump people is the Roy Cohn school of never back down, double down, and attack when you're attacked, counterattack, don't play defense. Like I said at the beginning, they're going to go down with the ship on that. The only question is, hopefully it's not the SS United States, which, by the way, that ship is going to be sunk off the coast of Florida, what have you. But anyway, that's where we're at. We're at on those things, at least in my opinion. I don't know what you're thinking there.
So how is that reflected, for example, in, let's get back to Brezhnev, in the Pennsylvania 8th, which is Scranton, Hazleton, all the way down to Stroudsburg, big district geographically.
It is, but it's a consolidated district now. You no longer have the 14 or 15 counties, rural counties, that you have in your district up there.
Right.
I think what we're seeing from Bresnahan is he's trying to have the best of both worlds. He's trying to hold on to the Trump base and still appeal to the voters who are disaffected by Trump's policies. And that's going to be a very, very difficult trick. But, and part of it is going to be the registration. The Republicans have been out registering Democrats. We keep hearing that Gene DePasquale, the new Democratic state chairman, wants to reverse that trend, but I'm not seeing it yet. Ken Martin, the national Democratic chairman, says he's put a significant amount of funding in to get people to register as Democrats, not Republicans. And we're hardly seeing that. We're a long way from Howard Dean.
A long way, right. Bresnahan has suffered a setback this 2 weeks ago. When he ran, I don't know if anybody knew it at the time, but he got a lot of support from the Koch brothers' political action committee, a lot of money. And 2 weeks ago, they announced that not only would they not any longer give him any money, they would spend money advertising against him because they were angered by the fact that even though he continues to trade stocks, he proposed the bill to prevent congressmen from trading stocks. And he also opposed the Trump administration on a number of other things that were at the margins. They were not significant. They were at the margins. For example, he voted just 2 days ago against a bill that the Trump administration introduced, which effectively would have removed a certain requirement to pay certain workers overtime. So he voted against that. He was one of seven or eight Republicans who voted against it, and it went down to defeat. So overtime pay for those workers was maintained in the law. Of course, that's hardly central to the well-being of the working class, but that's what he did.
Yeah. Well,
but that's the kind of thing that he does. Does it at the margins, right, where it's irrelevant, But it was enough to cause the Koch brothers to say, "The hell with you! We're campaigning against you." So he's vulnerable. He's vulnerable.
Yeah, right now it's the Koch father and son.
Yeah,
David Koch. That it's Charles and his son.
Yeah.
But in any event, we're seeing Pennsylvania is going to be ground zero again for Congress. We have got three or four races that the Republicans are really sweating out, and their internal polling must show this. You have Bresnahan here in the eighth. You have the Lehigh Valley race down from Allentown. We have the Brian Fitzpatrick race outside of Philadelphia, the Bucks County thing, where he's first used to be his brother, and then him. He's been able to withstand in election after election a Democratic push to get him out. And he's voting the same way as Bresnahan is on these things. You have Scott Perry down in the York or Lancaster area. I think it's the York area, Lebanon area. And that's a lot of Congress without the redistricting issue, the gerrymandering issue being on the table in Pennsylvania. This is... Pennsylvania is going to be the hotbed. Well, we're going to see a lot of ads, and we're going to see a lot of money
that,
for it.
That would be six votes right there, right? A switch of six votes. Three fewer Republican votes if they lose. Three more Democratic votes if they win.
Well, four.
Or possibly four. Yeah.
Four, yeah. And so those things are, I think those are, once...
of course, it may all be obviated by a Supreme Court ruling that invalidates the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
If they do that, then of course you'll have a lot of gerrymandering that makes sure that none of this matters.
Well, they can't get any gerrymandering through the legislature right now. So
this I'm talking about other states.
Other states, yeah. But other states, California has already pushed it through. Virginia's going to probably push it through. I don't know, Illinois or whatever, Indiana, whatever the Republicans hope to pick up by gerrymandering, they may have lost in other states. But, as a side issue, the demographic trend towards the South and the West is going to change the nature of the Electoral College much greater after 2030. So the Democrats better, grab hold now in the next two election cycles, because they're going to have a harder time unless they can change the political winds of Texas or Florida again.
All right. So that's your summation of the first year of the Trump administration.
Yeah, the Trump administration. And he gave himself the great prize of the medallion of the Nobel Prize. But typical of, that he didn't earn it. And again, that was a cave-in. And I got to wait and see when people start, if they ever do start to stand up to him, what occurs instead of pandering. Right now, though, the pandering pays off.
Well, he came into office saying that he was going to produce more jobs, and there's fewer jobs now than there were when he came in.
Yeah.
There were fewer people employed now than when he came in.
Yeah.
So he gets a failure on that one.
He gets a failure, but it's a success for him and his family, because they're raking off billions of dollars through all sorts of schemes. They talked about the Biden crime family and Hunter Biden. I mean, if there were any illegal activities, the scale of it is pales in comparison to what's being done now.
All right. Well, to be continued. Let's see what happens in the coming week.
Yep.
As Trump starts year two.
Yep. Happy birthday, Ben Franklin.
And
Martin Luther King.
Right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.